Wells Fargo, one of the most respected banks in the country, turns out to have a poisonous cross-selling culture. What can we learn from this scandal, and how will it affect community banks and credit unions? I'm your host, Honey Shelton, and in this special episode of Training Matters, we will visit with three guests that can help shed light on this mess. Let's see what they have to say.
Training Matters is brought to you by the Training Institute, dedicated to setting the standard for individuals responsible for training effectiveness in banks and credit unions across the country.
Our first guest is Rogers Pope Jr., a good friend of mine, and serves as the Vice Chairman and CEO of Texas Bank & Trust. Rogers, I'm so glad to have you on the show today. Please share with us what the corporate culture is like at Texas Bank & Trust and how your bank approaches cross-selling.
Well, thanks, honey. It is a pleasure to talk to you today. I think it's interesting that you start the questioning with the term culture, because when I sit back and look at everything that's going on with the Wells Fargo debacle, I think it begins and ends with culture, and it is a good time for banks like ours and others to assess our own culture and make sure that we are adhering to our core values, adhering to the vision and mission statements which we have all adopted. For us at Texas Bank & Trust, that's really about helping our customers identify and achieve their financial goals and objectives. I'm privileged each month to get to address a group of new employees through our new employee orientation process. And one of the things that I talk about with them is the fact that we hire based upon three things: character, chemistry, and competency. And those are in order because that's the priority of them. Frankly, you can be the smartest banker around, but if you don't have the character or the chemistry to fit within our organization, it's not going to work. And hopefully the culture that we have aspired to develop, and hopefully we've been successful in doing so, is one that puts the interest of our customers first. People ask, you know, what are your goals in terms of asset growth or branch development or profitability? And while I do have those goals in mind, the first goal is to make sure that we serve our customers as well as we possibly can. We want to create raving fans. And if we do that, all of the financial goals will take care of themselves. You asked about cross-selling, and I will tell you, like a lot of banks out there, historically, we've admired the success that Wells Fargo has had when it comes to cross-selling. Obviously, we did not know how they went about doing that. We didn't know their secret, and I guess now we do. That is something that we have measured, and we have targets that we'd like to hit in that regard. Frankly, they're a little less ambitious than the 8 products per household that Wells Fargo has been known to shoot for. But we do a pretty good job in that. However, I will point out that we are very judicious in the use of our incentive programs, and I do think that's one of the issues that created a problem here. And we have those programs vetted by our compliance officers as well as our internal audit staff. And then the other thing is, you know, we put just so much emphasis on meeting the customer's needs, and we want to listen for those cues as to when a customer may have a particular need, when we feel we have a product or service that can assist that customer. But if they give us any indication that that's not for them, well, then we back off, kind of a no means no approach, if you will. And, you know, thus far, our approach has paid off for us. I think we've been very successful with that approach and, you know, knock on wood, have not had any sort of the conduct like what's being talked about here with the Wells Fargo situation.
So in talking to people who've worked at Wells and reading everything I can, I know that you certainly have a big interest in it, like we all do. Anytime the word bank pops up, what is your take Raj, on the Wells Fargo sales quota system that resulted in 5,300 people losing their job and the CFPB imposing its largest penalty to date, a fine of $185 million.
Yeah, you know, and you say those numbers, both of them, the $185 million in fines, and I think that's with CFPB, OCC. I know they had to pay some to the city and county of Los Angeles, and then there is a portion of that that's actually been customer reimbursement, which is appropriate. Frankly, I don't think we've heard the end of that. I know that there are some lawsuits that have been filed and more being contemplated. The Department of Justice is getting involved. I know the CEO and others are being summoned to Congress for hearings, so I think there's more to come. The 5,300 employees that have been terminated over the course of the last few years who were engaged in this behavior, that's a number that really sticks out. And I know Wells has a huge employee base, but still to think that it was that widespread and really systemic throughout the entire institution is very concerning to me. And I guess what that tells me is that not only was it a lack of oversight, a lack of management, a lack of internal controls, but for it to be that systemic and widespread, the assumption would be, well, this must have been behavior that was actually encouraged by the culture. And funny you talk about having you yourself spoken to former employees. I actually spoke to a former manager who was in my office just this past Friday. Just circumstances were that she happened to be there. And she pretty much verified that the culture was so intense on this cross-selling, and of course compensation was very much incentive-based, that it did promote this sort of behavior. And I think it was, you know, from what I'm gathering, not simply a matter of management turning a blind eye to what was going on, but in some cases, actively encouraging this behavior. And so that's what's most disappointing about it to me. We heard a term thrown around recently, deplorable. There's no better word for it. It is, in fact, deplorable behavior, and I'm sad for the folks that I know. There are plenty of good folks at Wells Fargo. I have no doubt about that. Obviously, I'm disappointed for the customers who have been affected, and then the industry as a whole, because make no mistake, this gives the entire industry a black eye, and that's very disappointing.
Well, I liked all the points you made there. I couldn't agree with you more. And it's like embezzlement or other acts or decisions or crimes that happen in the industry that the consumer and even commercial account holders and borrowers can get a very skewed picture of what's going on. What do you think the potential fallout of this Wells Fargo scandal could be for community banks?
Yeah, I've given that a lot of thought, actually. I'm going to say two things as potential fallout, one good and one bad, perhaps. The good is that perhaps it does give community banks another opportunity to differentiate ourselves from some of these mega banks that, you know, they've been called too big to fail. Perhaps they're too big to manage. It appears they're too big to regulate. I've heard regulators actually use that term. The business model held by Wells and the other large mega banks is so very different from what the business model is for most community banks, and certainly Texas Bank and Trust is in that latter group. So I do think there is an opportunity for community banks, whether or not you're in a Wells Fargo market or not, to really go out and promote the distinction that community banks have. Honey, we're a $2.3 billion bank, but if I have a single customer who wants to call me up and have a meeting with me, whether it's in person or by phone or whatever, I'm going to do it. And that's one of the things community banks offer, access to the executive management of the bank. We're engaged in our communities. We are engaged with our customers. We know our customers and what they're trying to achieve, and we're partners with them. We talk about relationships all the time. All banks do, but we're actively engaged in building those relationships. So I do think it provides us a unique opportunity to, again, differentiate between what we call Main Street banks and Wall Street banks, or in this case, San Francisco-based banks. So that's one possible silver lining, if you will. I'm not sure that it outweighs the negative, which I think is most likely to be more regulation for banks. And regulation is not a bad thing in and of itself. Don't get me wrong in that. I think regulation needs to be in place, not only to ensure the safety and soundness of financial institutions, but to protect consumers. And so those are good things. And I think appropriate, right-sized regulation is a good thing. But what often happens in circumstances like this, and we need to look no further back than 2008 and the financial crisis and Dodd-Frank and in the aftermath of that, we have regulations that come out and are perhaps somewhat a little overreactionary, but the smaller banks who can least afford compliance with all the new and complex regulations are hit disproportionately hard with respect to these new regulations. Kind of a one-size-fits-all approach to regulation is going to disproportionately and adversely affect the smaller banks. And there's just no two ways about it. What that means is added cost for those banks, and those costs are inevitably, in one way or another, passed along to customers. And so in the long run, consumers do tend to suffer from over-regulation. Again, there's a fine line, there's an appropriate amount of regulation, but I am concerned that a lot of smaller community banks are going to be paying for the sins of larger banks, and specifically Wells Fargo in this case.
Well, Rogers, thanks so much for giving us your view from where you sit managing a community bank, $2.3 billion in assets. I've had the opportunity on numerous occasions to work with you and your team, and I know the culture of your bank. I'm proud that you're my client, and I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for being on our show, Rog.
All right. Thank you, honey. My pleasure.
What's on your calendar for October 26th or November 17th? I will be conducting a webinar on those days about how you can shape your sales and service culture so that it becomes a customer-focused, employee-engaged success. Are you ready to get it right when it comes to cross-selling? Go to our homepage, interaction-training.com, and check out our calendar for more information and how to register. Or you can email me, honey, at interaction-training.com. Please join me for this timely and dynamic webinar on how to get cross-selling right. Our next guest is Julie Story. I'm very pleased to have Julie back on the show. She has a lot of experience in what works and what doesn't work in a sales culture. Julie, thanks for being here. I think you can bring a lot to this special episode of Training Matters. In light of the Wells Fargo debacle, share your experience with incentive pay, especially at the branch level.
Well, honey, it's certainly a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to spend a little bit of time with you and talk about this topic. I think this is going to maybe tarnish incentive pay as folks look at it from a banking perspective. However, I do feel that there is a place for incentive pay where you're rewarding those people who are doing a very good job and, you know, paying them for great performance. The key, however, is having a carefully prepared incentive plan, because if you're not careful about how you put a plan together, you can very easily have unintended consequences. So you've got to really think it through, and then you've got to monitor it very carefully to make sure that it is incenting the right behaviors and that employees are demonstrating those behaviors that are important to the financial institution. My rule of thumb with cross-sell was always provide every product and service that will benefit and help a customer, but never ever try to provide them with any product or service that they don't want or need. And that's going to be key in having a good program. Most of all, you've got to inspect what's happening, coach your employees, all of them, not just those who are not performing well, equally important, those that are performing well, and understand what are they doing, how are they doing it, so you can make sure, again, the results that they're having are the results that are important to the organization.
Julie, I really like your emphasis on doing the right thing by the customer, doing the right thing by inspecting what you expect. Can you share some ideas about training, coaching, tracking that help ensure that your plan can be successful? Tell us about your experience there.
Yeah, honey, it takes all of the above. Anytime you implement something, or equally important, if you change something, if you make changes to an existing incentive program, it takes time for people to adapt to that change, and they need to make sure they understand the change. Humans in general don't like change that well. So training is a big part of either implementing or changing an incentive plan for the frontline, making sure they understand it, how it works, what the goals and objectives are with that, having good and timely tracking of their performance so that they can see the fruits of their labor, what's happening and how that's tracked. But then coaching people, really understanding what are you doing, how are you doing it, and then helping them understand maybe different ways to do things to be more successful. But it takes a lot of energy on behalf of management to really do things right. And again, to monitor, are we getting the results that we're looking for? And, you know, cross sales, that's always good because, you know, customers don't necessarily understand all of the ways a financial institution can help them. And so they're looking to the banker to help give them guidance. And so it's important that bankers understand the products, most importantly, understand what matters to the customer so that they can do those cross sells. I will tell you though, incentive programs can backfire if they're not written properly. People will figure out a way to do what you're incenting them to do. And again, that might not be what you really want them to do. And that's why management has to pay careful attention, has to have tracking, and has to communicate with employees to understand what is happening as a result of the program that's been implemented.
Every one of those are such important points. And of course, what we're talking about here has to do with auditing, has to do with accountability, has to do with ethics. My understanding is one of the ways that the Wells culture failed is that the pressure was do or die. Have you ever worked in an environment where if the service you provided or the sales quotas weren't met, that your job was at risk? Have you seen that or administered anything like that?
Honey, I absolutely have. And interestingly enough, Wells was associated with that. And this was several years ago. I worked for a regional financial institution. And from what I understand, the bank I worked for, CEO was at a meeting, and the Wells CEO at the time was talking about some metrics that they had, and they called it sales per sales FTE. And then, of course, talked about how strong Wells cross-selling was. And I think at the time it was 6-1, 6 products for each 1 new customer. So the bank I worked for jumped on the bandwagon. We've got to have the sales per sales FTE metric. And I had a region of branches at that point in time, and there was a tremendous amount of pressure for all sales FTE to achieve a certain number of sales each day. And they had a list of all of the products and services that would count as a sale. I pushed back and said, you've got to be kidding me. You know, a debit card is going to be valued the same as a very large home equity line of credit or, you know, a large deposit account. And basically they said, yeah, this is what you need to do. And I refused to get on that bandwagon. And I basically said to my team, do your absolute best provide every product and service that your customers want and need, but never provide them anything that is not going to be beneficial to them that they don't want. And I sheltered my team from a tremendous amount of pressure that I was getting to hit these ridiculous sales per sales FTE numbers. And I said to management, to my management, and of course, you know, when you're looking at a large regional company, you know, regional manager with a couple dozen branches isn't a big fish at all. And I explained to management that I thought it was crazy, that I thought it was going to erode the revenue of the bank because we were not focusing on the right thing, that just trying to get a sale for the sake of getting a sale is a short-term win at best, but the long-term benefit is actually going to be negative. So I continue to get a lot of pressure, and I finally said, you know what, there's a lot of people who would love to get paid what I'm being paid and be told what to do every day, but I'm not one of them. And I found another job and tendered my resignation. And that the person I was reporting to at the time said, but doesn't it make you feel good that the company is doing what you said they should have done by discontinuing the Sales for Sales FTE program? And my response was, that absolutely doesn't make me feel better that it took them this long to figure out that something like this isn't going to work. You know, I look at the whole situation with Wells, and their very, very high cross-sell ratios and other metrics have been so much a part of the organization for such a long time. I can see how a lot of folks, especially if they're saying, man, I need this job, couldn't do anything about the situation, even though in their heart they may have believed that the wrong things were happening for the wrong reasons. Executive management wouldn't listen to somebody, you know, if I were in their organization, even at a regional manager level, they wouldn't listen to somebody like me. So you can see how it would just cascade down and it would be like a huge waterfall, very difficult to stop.
I completely concur, especially with the idea that incentive pay is a good thing. If a financial institution benefits and the customer benefits from being given the right size of shoes like you would at Dillard's or Macy's, and the customer likes the shoes, that you make the sale. And when the emphasis is on the metrics versus the customer or versus feedback from employees and managers about emphasizing the metric over emphasizing taking care of our customer, and all reports so far in my investigation have indicated that people did try to bubble information up to let leadership of Wells know that it was an unrealistic, ridiculous plan. I know Congress is inviting the CEO of Wells to come and talk about it. We'll see. I'm sure more will be revealed. But you gave us some great things to think about. I really want to encourage our listeners to continue to tweak and manage building a relationship with their customer, which means right-sizing them with products or packages that they truly benefit from, and it makes sense for the employee, it makes sense for the manager, and most especially the customer. Julie, any closing remarks before we end our show?
Honey, just one thought, and this is something that a financial institution could do on their own. They could hire a company like Pinnacle, or they could hire, you know, one of several companies who offer this service. But we do a survey, we call it Voice of the Customer, where financial institutions provide us a list of customers that have done various transactions in the organization. It might be a teller transaction, maybe some type of account maintenance, or a brand new customer coming in to open an account. And we contact those customers and ask for feedback on their experience. You know, how did the banker handle the transaction? If they were coming in to open an account, did the banker ask questions understand the needs that they had and recommend products and services that they felt were appropriate for them. Even if you're spot checking, I think surveys like that may have caught some of these erroneous account openings that happened at Wells, because a customer who did not authorize an account to be opened would have said, "What are you talking about?" And they could have found this issue sooner. So when we talk about inspecting what's happening and making sure an incentive program is incenting the right activities and behaviors, there's a number of things financial institutions can do to really ensure that they're achieving the results that they want the way they want.
Great. And if somebody wanted to know more about that service, how can they get in touch with you, or how can they check it out online?
They can check it out online by going to www.pinstrat.com. And that's a part of our Peak Performance Measurement group that's a part of Pinnacle. So listeners interested in learning more about that type of service, please go online. If indeed they'd like more information, they can simply click to request more information or give us a call.
Wonderful. Well, Julie, it's always fun to have you on the show, and I will look forward to the next time.
Looking forward to it, honey. Thank you so much.
Our last guest is Roger Beveridge. Roger is the man at the Oklahoma Bankers Association. Roger is an advocate for community banks, someone who stays on top of what's happening and what needs to happen out there in the banking world. Roger, I'm delighted to have you back on our show and see how you can enlighten us about this Wells Fargo cross-selling mess. Before we kick off, remind our listeners of what your role is when it comes to helping community banks succeed.
Well, honey, what our association does and what they do all over the country is, first and foremost, they serve as advocates for the industry. And the reason they do that is they're trying to create a political and regulatory environment that's beneficial to our member banks so that our member banks can better serve their customers and their communities. That's something that's become increasingly difficult since Dodd-Frank, but we're trying to work within the system and do what we can to get banks back in the business of, for example, here in Oklahoma, making home mortgage loans. The rules that have come out from Dodd-Frank have caused a lot of banks simply to get out of the business because of the risks involved from a litigation and regulatory perspective. But we've been working with the regulators and the Congress trying to modify some of those rules so bank customers can once again have access to capital, which has been a big problem since Dodd-Frank was passed for smaller banks like we have here in Oklahoma. Briefly, we also do education and training. We try to make sure that bankers have the latest information about how to do their jobs better and how to better serve their customers and their communities. And that's, in fact, the whole point of the association, to help make bankers better so that they can be better equipped to take care of their customers and their communities. We do some other things, fraud investigation, for example. Probably the most valuable thing we do is legal and compliance service that we offer to our member banks, because we want them to feel comfortable that when they're doing some transaction, they're doing it correctly. And so we make our lawyers and our compliance people available at no charge to the bank to simply make sure that I's are properly dotted and T's are properly crossed. Our fraud, I mentioned a moment ago, but that division works not just with member banks, but bank customers all over the state. In fact, in several other states, we've been known to help customers. We've aligned with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in Washington on some fraud issues, particularly as they relate to seniors. And the OBA is at the forefront of trying to make sure that the community banks we represent are or will continue to be known as the good guys. And hopefully we can be successful in maintaining that collective environment of service to customers and to communities, because that, after all, is the most important thing.
Well, I know that your dedication to taking care of the community banks, providing service, like you mentioned, is the heartbeat of the Oklahoma Bankers. I treasure my relationship with your association and with you and your staff. You know, today I'm really looking hard at this Wells Fargo mess, and I'm wondering, what's your understanding of what the CFPB's findings were around the Wells Fargo collapse of their sales culture?
Well, my understanding, without having read the order that CFPB put into place, and they levied a fine of about $185 million against Wells Fargo in the process, my understanding is that they discovered that over a period of 4 or 5 years, a number of Wells Fargo employees had opened more than 2 million accounts falsely for some of their customers. And as I understand it, they acted in that manner and committed that fraud because of pressure on the employees to meet certain sales goals. And it's my understanding that the CFPB may have come to the table a little bit late, but this issue had been going on since at least 2013 in terms of people knowing about it, because an article that first appeared in the Los Angeles Times, I think, put everybody on notice. And so the OCC and the CFPB all got on board, and if it hadn't been for the Bureau, they brought a lot of strength to the table to get Wells Fargo to abide by their orders. But each account opening, honey, was an instance of fraud. So just think about that for a minute. More than 2 million allegedly were opened. More than 5,000 employees were terminated over a period of 4 or 5 years. And it wasn't just all at once. It was over a period of time. So my guess is somebody knew what the score was. These people weren't apparently being terminated because of reasons other than not meeting their sales goals or not being able to take care of meeting customer needs or whatever it might be. It's a little unclear why they were fired, but 5,300 people are no longer with the company. But in spite of that, the problems still seemed to persist. That's what I guess just baffles so many people. The issue of meeting sales goals is something that was a very important issue for Wells Fargo. I know that the share price of Wells Fargo continued to increase, generally speaking, based in part on having reached its sales goals and generating revenue, at least on paper. You have to ask yourself, where did the money actually come from? Because these were accounts that customers apparently didn't know anything about and were more or less dummy accounts, if I understand it correctly. And I may be mistaken on that. But it just seems to me there are a lot of unanswered questions, and we're at the beginning of examining this issue, not the end of it.
Boy, it is a mess. In some ways, it's almost like a circus. I find myself outraged that, as you pointed out, the Bureau is who brings this to light, that Wells didn't even take the lead to come out and say, we found this problem, we're working hard to correct it. We don't want to lose customer confidence. We don't embrace forcing people into doing things that are illegal or unethical. Do you see, as a result of all this, the regulators becoming involved in examining, even maybe making recommendations for all banks around the topic of sales compensation to employees due to this?
Oh, absolutely. And it's already begun. Senate Banking Committee Chairman Richard Shelby from Alabama is on record of saying that their hearing at the Banking Committee is just the beginning of a lot of things, and then he revealed what I've been afraid of has been on the minds of senators and others, that when he said that a lot of us are worried that perhaps there are similar goings on in other banks. Notice he says other banks. He doesn't say other Wall Street firms or other regional banks or other national banks or whatever it might be. He says banks. And there are at least 6,000 banks in this country that I think those are the correct numbers that are classified as community banks. And I would dare say that the instances of this kind of fraudulent activity are slim and none. I could be wrong, but based on my experience, I'd be awfully surprised if it were very widespread in smaller community banks. And Mr. Cordray, who heads up the Bureau, a very powerful federal regulatory agency, and one that has made a number of changes in the way banks are able to serve their customers, is also on record as saying that they've been looking at these kinds of problems in all banks. And again, Mr. Cordray has trouble distinguishing between community banks and the Wall Street firms. And the reason I mention this is because ultimately a rule is going to come out which is going to be imposed on everybody, having to do with incentive programs, how they work, bonuses, compensation, anything that is structured to be tied to bank activity is going to come into question. And in many smaller banks, those are important parts of being able to maintain a good employee base and to also take care of customers. But Cordray's opinion in most instances is that a bank is a bank is a bank. You and I both know that that's nonsense. A community bank is nothing like a Wall Street firm. A community bank depends for its livelihood on its relationships with its customers. And if a community bank did some of the things that are alleged to have been done at Wells Fargo, they wouldn't be in business very much longer, I would venture a guess. And so I'm just thinking that the trickle-down effect, which is something that always happens in Washington, they figure what's good for one is good for everybody, and it's this one-size-fits-all mentality that, you know, drives me crazy most of the time. I'm just afraid that what will happen ultimately is that new restrictions will be imposed on all banks, and when that happens, the cost of compliance with those new rules, and it doesn't make any difference what kind of rules they are, it's going to fall disproportionately on smaller community banks. Now, why is that? Well, it's because they don't have the resources and they don't have the people that are necessary in order to make sure that compliance is run exactly the same way as it is in a Wall Street $2 trillion firm. I mean, it's nonsense to think that a little bank of $15 million in total assets with 3.5 employees is held to the same standards as JPMorgan Chase. Large bank, very successful bank, very good bank. But they've got 25,000 compliance lawyers, you know, and as opposed to 3.5 employees that have to do everything that Chase has to do. And so I think even the most cynical consumer or person or congressman or senator would look at that and have to honestly say, you know, that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And they would be right if they said that. That's my fear of what's going to happen. And it's going to come over a process in which this is going to take place. The other thing it's done, as far as I'm concerned, is going to make our job of trying to be an advocate for smaller banks, it's going to make it a lot more difficult, because folks on Capitol Hill tend to do the same thing that Senator Shelby did and that Mr. Cordray does when he lumps all banks in together. And I spend most of my time trying to explain why that is not true to members of Congress and their staff members. And I'm just not looking forward to the fallout that's sure to come. This issue is not even close to being over. I think we have only discovered the very tip of the iceberg. at least as it relates to Wells Fargo and perhaps with other banks. I don't know that. I don't think that. But since Senator Shelby raised the question, you'd be naive not to think, well, gee, maybe he's right. I don't know. I didn't know about this until it broke in the LA Times in 2013. And then you have to wonder, well, what took him so long to figure out in Washington what was going on if the LA Times wrote about it in 2013? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what happened. I don't know any of the details about it. But something happened. As I've said before, this is not just an instance of some dishonest employees who are trying to scam the system. This issue is systemic within the bank. It goes right to the bank's culture and what is perceived as the right way or the wrong way to do things. And apparently, they rewarded this kind of behavior by paying Ms. Tolstedt, or whatever her name was, that was in charge and supervised at a senior level all of these operations, a humongous bonus of reportedly up to $125 million upon her retirement. You have to shake your head and say, how can that possibly have been allowed? And I think that's another issue that we can talk about, which has to do with, all right, it happened. Now what are we going to do about it? And what is Congress going to do about it, more importantly? And ultimately, what is the board of directors of Wells Fargo going to do about it? And I don't know the answer to any of those questions.
Well, Roger, this has been attention-getting from the get-go when it broke in its biggest way. As you said, I noticed it and thought that it was an isolated situation just in California. And you raise a lot of wonderful questions. I can even imagine you and I having an additional conversation down the road here as things continue to develop. Thank you so much for your insight, your hard work for community banks. Another opportunity will come up. We can see where this Wells mess gets to in the next few months.
I really look forward to it, honey. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
I'd like to thank all of our guests and you, our listening audience, for tuning in. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play or your favorite podcast platform. If you're new to the show, you can listen to previous episodes on our website, interaction-training.com. We're glad you joined us for this special episode of Training Matters. We'll talk again soon.
You've been listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton.